I lived on an estate, and it was Jed Scudder. He had another fellow living on there, another man there, and he sent him to college at Farmingdale, agricultural. And he had an idea that I should go to agricultural too. I mean, I lived on the estate and I worked on here and so forth, and he wanted to send me to Farmingdale. But he also had a kennel of Cocker Spaniels, Robin Hurst Kennels. And I was, as a kid, I was, we're in high school now. One of the men that used to come up to see the kennel man up there at the kennel, he was interested in Cockers too, was Jack Sloan. And his uncle was Sloan General Motors. And he had been to Cornell. So he said, what are you going to do? I'm supposed to go to agriculture. He said, what the hell do you want to be? Do that? Be a veterinarian, go to the veterinary college. He says, you can go to Cornell. It's a land-grant college. There's no tuition. You'll go for 1 year. If you like it, you continue. If you don't like it, you quit and you've had a year of college.
How old were you?
I was 18.
So you had finished high school?
Yeah, well, I was in high school then, you know, there. And that's when he had. So, back in those days, that was the end of the horse. And there was no small animal. And you didn't have any trouble getting into vet college. All you had to do was have your high school requirements. You had to have 3 years of a language or 2 years of two language and the basic things. And that's all you needed. You just wrote, and you were in.
Did you have an interview or did anybody call
you? No, nobody.
They just sent you a letter and said you're in.
I'm in. I don't know anything about it. I've never been to Cornell. I never knew anything about Cornell. I'm in the vet college.
Did you like animals, or did you like science, or did you like both?
Well, I liked animals, and we had a kennel on the place there. We had a horse, two mules, about four cows, a kennel of Cocker Spaniels. We had chickens. We lived on that. I mean, as a kid, I churned butter, did all those things that you did on a farm. My mother used to cook. She baked bread and so forth there. This estate was run like a farm.
Tell me how you got to Ithaca in 1930. Was it a train?
A train.
And where did you pick up the train?
New York, I guess. But all of a sudden, I'm supposed to go to Cornell, so I go over there and get the train, land up in Cornell. Well, that was an experience. You get a kid there, never away from home, and you're on the train and you land up at Ithaca at the railroad station, and there's plenty of other kids coming there too. You're met at somebody there and he has a laundry bag, a big khaki laundry bag with a big red C. And you're not going to be able to go through college unless you got one of those big C laundry bags. So they sold you a laundry bag, I think it was for 50 cents. And then another fellow, you got a room. No. Wait here. And you got two or three fellows that didn't have a room, and they take us up with a car up to a little office place they had up on the hill in college town. And you'd sit there. Okay, well then, what kind of room do you want? You want a room on your own or with one or two? Yeah. So they know what you want. And then he'd take one or two of us out, and he'd go to one of the houses up there at college town up there, you know, just down the hill from Cascadilla. And you have a house there and a room, okay. You want a single room? She's got a single room. You looked at it, says, okay, all right. Then you would go up to the office there and pick up your bag. You were set. First, when I looked at it, I took. I didn't know what I wanted. They had a single room. They had another larger room with two other fellows in the ag college there. So there was three of us in the house.
Tell me about class. So you started class in the fall of 1930.
Class of 1930, right. Now, it's hard to remember, but it seems to me that we started with about 80, didn't we? I think the class ended up with about 40, but I think they started off with a lot more, because I remember they kept warning you. You look, and the fellow on this side and the fellow that side, maybe both of those won't be here by the time the class is going. It wasn't going to be easy. And you had no electives or something. You had a book and it told you exactly what you took each term. And you went on. It was 4 years. There was no pre-vet. In 4 years, you went from high school and you had a DVM. You didn't know whether you were going to come. You were overwhelmed. I mean, you're a kid at home, not on your own. You're up there, you're living in the house, you go and take your meals when you feel like it, you eat what you want to do, eat, you do what you want to do, you go to class, and nobody seems to give a darn about what you're doing. It was all new to me. You know, it was just a whole way of life.
Tell me about Dr. Fish. He taught you physiology.
He had physiology. You know, I don't remember much about him. I just remember that he was an old, old man. And we didn't have him too long. And then Dukes took it over.
Do you remember Dukes?
Better than Fish.
Who taught you anatomy?
Dr. Hopkins. And he was a character, too. He apologized to the class. We were the last class that had hazing at the vet college, as far as I know.
Who taught you surgery? Dr. Frost?
Yes, Frost. Now, I remember him. He was short, stiff, heavy, very heavy. But I don't remember him much of anything. I don't know. We didn't have much surgery. All of ours was anatomy. Oh, that was murder. I mean, I smoked a little bit, but not much. But when you went up there and you did all this anatomy, it was all cows. And you get this formaldehyde and grease under your fingernails. And you can't get rid of it. And when you go to eat, you bring your hand up here, you smell that, and you lose your appetite. Everybody smoked or chewed or did something there. That was what separated the men from the boys. If you stuck through the first year of anatomy, you could take anything.
Did you learn pathology from Dr. Olofsson?
Olofsson, yes. Now, he was something. He would come in class, he wouldn't say a word, he'd put his watch down on the table, and he would start talking. And all of a sudden, he would pick up his watch, put it in his pocket, and walk out. That's my recollection of him. He was very brusque. I remember we went over the quadrangle, and I think we had microscopes over there. That's the only place where they had a bunch of them. Then we went to chemistry. Baker, I think it was. The rest of it was all in our vet college. It was nice because Sage Chapel was the girls. They were mostly ag or home ec, and they would come around the side of the vet college. We had a fellow in our class, Hallett, and he could play anything on a piano. And we would sit up in there before class in the room in there, a piano in there, and he's playing the piano. We're sitting up in the window watching all the girls from Sage there go up to home. That was a life, I'll tell you.
How often did you come home?
Rarely. As a matter of fact, Freddie was my buddy. In other words, you buddy up with somebody, and Freddie was from Ogdensburg. Freddie had a Model T Ford. So, vacation time, we would drive up to his place, up to Ogdensburg, and I'd pick up somebody, maybe charge them $5, pay for the gas, you know, go up there.
How did you link up with Dr. Zepp?
Well, that was an accident that I was very lucky, because the thing was, when you were a senior, well, before that, they would have this period there where vets would come up and interview the students. And a lot of them would line up beforehand. Well, I don't think I met anybody, but I was apparently assigned to a large animal thing. But at that time, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I mean, I just took veterinary medicine. But I wouldn't say I was a small animal man or anything. You do what you got a job. So, okay. So Mike Sorazzoletti had Zepp. And then something happened that somebody was released there, and it was a job that Sorazzoletti wanted. So he took that, and that freed Zepp. So I got Zepp that way, but it was just a lucky fluke.
Did everybody know about Zepp?
No. I didn't know anything about Zepp. He was a small animal man. He's in New York City.
Where was he in New York?
136 West 53rd Street, between 6th and 7th Avenue.
So did you do surgery? What sort of diseases did you see in the dogs and cats?
I guess mostly spaying. And we did small animal the way they learned to fly, by the seat of your pants. You had certain drugs that you knew did a certain thing, and you used your common sense. I can remember when I was up at Cornell, when they wanted to get a sample of urine from a female, a bitch, they had a frying pan on the end of a stick, and one would go and lead the dog around, and the other would go behind him with a frying pan, and when the dog would squat, he'd stick the frying pan under the dog, he'd touch the dog would jump, and he'd start all over again. And that's the way they got urine when I graduated from Cornell. So I got clear plastic funnel, and I cut the bottom out so I could put the funnel up into the vulva, and I could see the bottom, and I could see the urethra in there. Had a headlight on there, somebody held the door, and I've been there. That's what I learned. I learned that by myself. I started with $25 a week, and in those days, that was good money. And not only that, but I saved religiously $15 a week. And every so often, every month, I'd go down to the subway to 14th Street and deposit that money. I mean, in those days, you want to have money, you were going to get married, you need money and so forth there, you save your money. I got $25 a week, I lived on $10 a week. But in those days, you go to the Marion cafeteria on 6th Avenue, you could get a dinner, complete dinner for 75 cents. That was soup or juice, meat, two vegetables, beverage, and dessert, 75 cents.
How about fractures? Did dogs and cats?
Sure, you had fractures. You set legs. We had an x-ray, and you took x-ray pictures and so forth there, and you set them. But we had other things, too. We had Stater in there. I don't know if you ever heard of Stater splints?
I have.
Okay, well, Stater did the original thing in the Zeps there. Any veterinarian that visited New York City came to see Zep. It was an ideal place, and Zep was smart. He was a good veterinarian. He had a good brain, and he was a good politician, too. I was lucky. I mean, I got with the right man at the right place. Now, you talk Zep. Okay, I get there, and the first spay, I assisted him. Second spay, he assisted me. Third spay, I'm on my own.
What anesthesia did you use, ether?
Ether or Nembutal. And that was a pain in the neck because the darn ether, they were out of it all the time, or the Nembutal, they were so long time. And we were lucky because Zep knew, I think it was Sweeby or something like that, who was in the head of Abbott Laboratory. So we got hold of pentothal sodium when it was in the experimental stage.
Were there other good practices in New York City at the time?
Yes, there were. There was Dr. McKellar down in the village with Bob. McKellar Sr. was a large animal, and Bob McKellar was a small animal down there in the village.
So you were in the service from 1941?
1941 to about 48 at Cornell there. It's a land-grant college, so the first 2 years is compulsory ROTC. The second 2 years was elective. Now, if you took the elective, when you did your one day a week or something, you got an enlisted man's pay for one day. So about every 2 or 3 months, you got a check for about $12 or something. And as a kid, you know, in those days, the vets in there, nobody had money. They were mostly farm boys or something like that. And a buck went a long ways. So most of them took the advanced ROTC and they got a check. So we were in there. So when we got out as second lieutenants. And then they raised us to a first lieutenant equal to the medical there. So I was a first lieutenant in the reserve. So I was in the reserve when I was at Zeps. And I kept up my reserve. So all of a sudden there around April the 14th, I guess 1940 was Pearl Harbor, 41 Pearl Harbor.
41.
41. Okay, in April of 41, Colonel Seeley calls me and says they're going to put me on active duty. So I'm assigned to Fort Slocum in New Rochelle. So I'm in the Army. You have had no training in food inspection or anything like that. I'm assigned to Fort Slocum, which is an old Army post. So I'm a food inspector. All food of animal origin is inspected by the veterinary corps. So they throw in a few extra things. We did vegetables, fruits too, along with that. So some of it we inspected at the dock, some of it we went into the city. Well, I'm a new inspector. I don't know the ropes. And everybody is out to get you. I mean, they've got a contract. It's a certain grade of meat, and it's a certain price. If they can give you a lower grade of meat at a higher price, they're making a little bit. So they're out to slip everything you can. What I went through learning. I would have all these specifications, and when I took the train up to New Rochelle, reading specifications on eggs, the airspace in an egg, how much a crate of eggs weighed and so forth. And you learn by inspecting potatoes there. They get a bag of potatoes, dump it on the dock, take the big fat ones, cut them in half. If there's a center rod in there, right there. And then they reject the bag of potatoes. We would take a crate of eggs, open it up. We had candle eggs. I learned to candle eggs in the Army. That's where I learned. Now, I went at Fort Slocum, and I think I was there for about 3 months. And I learned the hard way. And then the Army sends me to Chicago to school for a while to learn something
about
food inspection.
Okay, so after your Army days, you came back and worked more for Zeppelin.
Then I worked for Zeppelin.
Tell me about your love of Cornell.
Love of Cornell? It's something that grows with the years. When you look back, you were on your own. You were a youngster there. Freddie Richardson was my buddy there. We had room, single rooms there for the first 2 years. Second 2 years, we stayed at Alpha Psi. So we lived at Alpha Psi. And he took care of the furnace. We did our own cooking. And in those days, you could get a cup of coffee and 2 donuts for 10 cents. And you know, down there at Collegetown, you got a card, $5.75 for $5. And you ate your meals in there. As I say, a cup of coffee and 2 donuts, 10 cents. And you ate in there, and some of the boys worked. Sometimes you pitched out, somebody was a waiter, they couldn't do it. Oh, you wait on a table, you work in the kitchen. You augmented your food that way too, but you were on your own. Freddie and I, neither of us had been drunk, so we decided we were going to get drunk, see what it's like. But we're not going to leave fraternity house. So one of the boys had a formula for making gin. I don't remember exactly now, but you had alcohol and you had water and syrup of citrine and juniper and glycerin. I don't know, but we made a quart bottle of gin. And of course it looked like water. Well, we had food down in there, so nobody knew it was gin in there. So one night, Freddie and I, we sit in there and we're sipping gin. And the only thing I remember is a picture on the wall started going like this way. And that was the end of it. I passed out, and then I guess Freddie passed out.
You keep coming back to Cornell every year for reunion.
Only recently. I came back there in 04. And that was my 70th. But that's the first time I think that I came back. I don't think I made any others. You wonder what brings me back? The Savage Club. Have you been to one of their shows?
Yes.
I live for their jazz music. When the Saints come marching in, I'm marching in too. They don't know it, but I have tapes from 5, 6, and 7 with the jazz on there and so forth, that anytime I want, the Saints can come marching in.
And you keep coming up to the Veterinary College on Saturday afternoons.
Well, come up, pay my respects. Now, at 09, then I go through the Veterinary College.
Yes.
But I don't feel that it's fair to the other classes if I go cutting in on them. I'm thinking of 09 now. I'll be there.